This is Vanya, my brother, Dharma brother, and good friend. He's here from Switzerland, visiting the various places that Koven and students that Koven. I don't want to say created, but that's not quite right. But it's the Koven flavor, our teacher. Vanya has been a big help to all of us who were floundering when Koven died and has spent a lot of his time helping us along. And it's a great honor for him to come and be with us tonight. But maybe we should do introductions around before. Yeah. So you hear the names, and now you may have to remember them.
Okay.
Ellie.
Hello, Ellie.
Britt.
Hello, Britt.
Peter.
Hello, Dan. Peter. Hi, Dan.
You too.
Two.
Donnelly.
Donnelly.
Jorge.
Sonia.
Bob.
Hello. Estella.
Edith.
Wendy.
Hello, Wendy.
Friedrich.
Hello, Friedrich.
Laurent.
Hello, Laurent. Well, good evening, everybody. I'm very happy to be here. It's such a nice feeling. Certainly, part of it is maybe the place, but mostly it's the people, the Sangha, that it's wonderful to float along a little bit in the floating center with you for a little peace. Before we came down here, we had Angie prepared a nice little dinner for us, and we, Peter and Angie and myself, talked about talking. And how actually each of us are not particularly fond of talking, but that it's part of what we are doing. And then when we did the sutra, the chant for the talking, which I'm not so familiar anymore because we don't do it in Switzerland, it ups the ante a little bit. In 100 million kalpas. So if a very enlightened being speaks a word, everybody says, ah, and the flowers blossom. But if a little bit of less enlightened being and more confused being speaks, it demands more of the listener. So you have to bring to the talk as much as I bring, because of course every sound, the cars driving by preach the Dharma as much as the person speaking here. When we say we speak about the Dharma, or we speak, we try to focus on the essence of what our life is, what is really important in our lives. Last night I was in Tassajara and Leslie gave a talk, and on the fundamental issue of self-preservation. So how we maintain a sense of ourselves, and at the same time loosen up that sense or make it penetrable, not getting stuck in the sense of a person, an identity. When we come into this world, we only have to look at a little baby, newly born. There's very little self-consciousness. There's just consciousness, completely open, no restrictions. But then it needs almost 24-hour care. We have to feed it, we have to clothe it, we have to wipe it, we have to take care of it. So it takes a long time, maybe 20 years, to develop a healthy sense of self, of unity in this life. We have to learn to say stop, where how far we can go, how far we let other people come to us, and we have to build up a healthy sense of ego. And then usually it takes about the same length of time to make that person that we built up, to make to make the lines, the borders transparent again. So that we can again look with big eyes into the world and see the incredible mystery of our existence. Feel the see and feel the things as they are, as they come, without having to immediately check them in a useful way. Does it help me? Does it hurt me? What can I do with it? So one of the things that is in our practice central in this way is taking refuge into the three treasures, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. We usually take refuge when things are not going so well. We have to take refuge from something that we don't like so much, and we want to go to a safe place or a comfortable place. When we take refuge to Buddha, in a narrow sense, in a literal sense, we take refuge in our ancestor teacher, Buddha Shakyamuni, and a little bit wider in all the patriarchs and teachers that we meet in this life. But in a deeper sense, Buddha means the word, the root meaning of but is awakening. So when we take refuge in the Buddha, we really take refuge in our best moments, in our enlightened mind. When we are really awake, when we are really here and present, we don't need to take refuge. We don't need to have a Buddha. We don't need any help in that sense. But as human beings, we tend to get confused and we forget. So we remind ourselves that we really want to live the way we see it in our best moments, in our most alive, in our enlightened moments, which we all know and we all have, and we tend to forget, so we remind ourselves. When we take refuge into Dharma, Dharma is the teaching, and of course it's the Buddhist teaching, but it's also all the teachings, all the wisdom teachings of all traditions that nowadays we have access to a wide range. But in the deepest sense, it's taking refuge in our life, accepting that our life and whatever happens in it is a teaching to us. We vow to take whatever happens, good and bad, as a teaching, as a help to grow, to grow in compassion and in wisdom. We may not like it, but if we look back on our lives, more often than it's the difficult things that brought us, made us grow, made us take another step, look further. And the times when it sort of sails along nicely, they are we like them, but usually growing happens it aches a little bit and it's a little stressful. So taking refuge in the Dharma really means that we say yes to our lives. We accept it and we will work with what is. And taking refuge in the Sangha, literally the people that help us on the way, our friends, Buddhist friends, but of course in a wider sense, all people that we meet, and again in ultimately all beings that are, we accept as our brothers and sisters, as our friends, we are connected with them. They are our family. This world is our family, not only the beings, but animals, and we are very deeply connected with them. In the modern times, you could say we are all stardust, made out of the same material. So we acknowledge the connectedness, that we are not separated from anything. There really are three aspects of the same thing, but the sort of concrete reminders and helps to negotiate our way through this life, which is, nobody knows what it is. And we have to, we have to at the same time remember that we don't know anything, and at the same time we have to learn many things in this life too, in order to be able to make a living, and to, our body has needs, and our mind has needs, and our emotions has needs to be taken care of in a good way. In many ways, it's a balancing act. always a question of balance, not to go too far on one side or too far on the other side. We can become so efficient in this, and that's sort of our culture, so efficient in managing the material world that we forgot the other part, the free and unrestricted part that doesn't know anything. We can also go on the other way overboard. We can, and in our mental institutions, there are some people that are really quite open and quite free in some way, but cannot manage in this world. So how we can negotiate this fundamental issue of self-preservation, how we can keep our identity going and growing and developing it into many facets, and always being open to the things we do not know and that come along, and at the same time have a good sense in this world, a way of being helpful to ourselves and others. So we, even though the Sangha is unlimited and everything belongs to it, it's also very important to have a concrete family like this Sangha, to have a good friend like Angie that can guide us and can, from her experience and from a lineage, from things that we don't have to reinvent the wheel every time from zero. We have before us other people were faced with the same puzzling situation that we are, finding ourselves in a world that is strange and familiar so it's important that we help each other and Peter pointed out there was somebody looked at people who are 100 years old and what was important, trying to find elements that are important, and of course it's important to eat well and exercise and stuff like that, but it seems like the main important factor that the person found out was that to have a good social context, to be loved and to have people that you can love, to be connected in a network of. And that's one of the things that we in the Western culture, and I find in America in particular, many people have lost. Begins with physically moving around so much as a child already, a few years here, you hardly get a chance to bond and get roots into the ground. So it's nice to be able to, on various levels, have a family. And it becomes always very obvious to me when I travel around, like I do now, I haven't done it for a while. Immediately you go to a zendo, there's a certain feeling, there's a certain quality of careful attention and friendly dealing with each other, which has a family flavor. And then even more subtle, when like Coben was had a certain way of being and doing, and that attracted people that were comfortable with that way, and so these places have, these sanghas have a certain flavor to it, which I immediately feel very much at home and comfortable. Coben also was one that didn't like the talking so much. He was very often he would start with, "Does anybody have any questions?" And then if nothing came, he would say, "You are not very helpful." But if people didn't have any questions, he probably didn't have so much to say either. It was just fine to be together. And our core practice really is to be together. And if we rest in our, as we're sitting, we learn to be comfortable with our own physical, and it's, in a way it starts really with a physical being, a presence, a physical presence that we cultivate in sitting, to be comfortable with being bored or being a little painful or being tired or whatever it is, or excited, and then but also being willing to share that with whatever comes up. So maybe it's time for me to ask, do you have any questions? Would you like to talk about something? Do you have any thoughts of your own that you want to contribute?
Taking refuge, as you were saying, we tend to take refuge when we're having a hard time. It seems very comforting. But how, so I guess taking refuge in a good time is pretty much what you were saying about the three treasures, kind of the best, being with the best moments of our life, and treasuring. I mean, I guess I'm asking about taking refuge in good times.
Well, my experience is that when I have a good time, I don't even think of the taking refuge, because maybe I already have taken refuge. So the need to take refuge arises when we are in trouble. Then we need a refuge. If we are already at home, and if we are already content, there's no particular need to. But then, as I also said, then maybe we do have to take refuge in order to grow and to do what we have to do. So it seems like life provides occasions where we do want to take refuge, because every life seems to go into stormy times. Mm-hmm. And then we need some kind of lighthouse or an orientation.
I think that's very helpful to think about that, and also that impermanence, I mean, when things are really good, I want to hang on to them. We all do, I think. So maybe in a way taking refuge in a good time could be a sort of not clinging, or working on not clinging.
you may some of you may be familiar with the Wheel of Life, sort of a Tibetan thing, often seen on a tanka. Used to be a very important teaching help. People in Tibet did mostly not be able to read and write, so they would use images. And then there are various, in the middle there, the three things that keep it all going: greed, hate, and delusion. And then there are layers, and that some, the main thing is the six realms of heaven and hell, and then in between. And each realm has a bodhisattva in it, who help these people, or help these beings in those realms. And in the top one, in the heavenly one, the bodhisattva has a musical instrument in his hands, or in her hands. And the idea is that at some point the music stops, and then heaven is over too, because everything is impermanent. So the reminder of those, if you are in that heavenly realm, you need the reminder that that too will pass.
There's no way of canning it, like, you know, in the summer you have lots of tomatoes, you can it for the winter.
That's good. I think that's good, healthy advice. And in the good times, we soak it up, and knowing that it too will come to an end, but at least my body and my mind and everything really appreciates and is grateful for that moment. And then hopefully when times get a little bit rougher again and bumpy, I still have enough steam and good feelings and good that I can somehow go through the rougher times. But basically, no, everything, of course, we have to let go. But we are sort of a can. I mean, you could maybe karma, you could look at it as our body and mind bears the whole what we have experienced in the past, and probably more than this one lifetime. Probably our cells remember the whole evolution on this planet, and like people tell us now why we worry so much or fear so much, and like they can explain that, I find very convincingly, that in the evolution it paid to worry and to fear. Those who were just only eating the blueberries, and if there was a sound they're not paying too much attention, well, the tiger came and they didn't survive so well. The ones who looked and were careful. So we have a tendency to evolutionary worrying and fearing paid more than having a good time. So we carry that with us to a certain degree. We can't that too. But then obviously, somehow, miraculously, we also have the capacity to be free of all of that. At least for a moment. And that's one of the things we practice in sitting a little bit, by letting go of everything, and then naturally if we keep letting everything go, some freedom comes up.
Sangha is like
in Switzerland.
Can
not so different from this Sangha. Very unorganized. We have no structure in that sense. We have no organizational aspect to it. We have a few sitting places and people come and we a lot of them are distributed all over Europe. Like people come to Sesshin from Germany, from Austria and Switzerland, and but over many years friendships have developed, and Coben once said, I remember very well, he said, it takes a long time to build a good sangha. So time seems, even though it is one of the factors that ultimately have no reality, but it, in our human lives time play a role, and we need to get to know each other, to be comfortable, to trust each other. We usually need a little time. We need to rub against each other. But you probably know yourself, sitting next to each other is a very special kind of intimacy that one acquires. You can sit a sesshin next to a person you never talk to, and you get amazingly intimate with that person, and you feel something. Struggle she or he is going through, or and you develop empathy, or also you can be very aggravated, the way the person always blows the nose or makes a movement, and it becomes the biggest problem in the world too, that you really struggle, and then all of a sudden you realize the poor person has a cold or something, and I get so upset. And so we help each other in that way, and expressingly, willingly to we know that that person too tries to, as good as she or he can, to be open, to be willing to be a mirror for me, or use me as a mirror, accept the fact that we are fundamentally the same. I don't know if that said anything. Time?
Yes, it looks like it is.
Okay.
Alas.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for accepting me here, letting me come, and I hope we'll do it many more times.
Please. Please, Vanya.
It's really nice to be with you.